1850 715 815.
Hello, good afternoon, and you're very welcome to Liveline. And Joe at RT.ie is the simple email address. Archbishop Dermot Farrell, the senior prelate, so far to come out saying that he will defy the public health guidelines and saying that the Dublin Diocese have permission to proceed with First Communions and confirmations in defiance of the government public health advice. Eva, you were listening to the Archbishop talking to Brian Dobson. Go ahead, Eva.
I was.
Your point, please.
Yep. I was listening to him, yes. Do you want me to comment?
Yeah, please, yeah.
Well, I think that the fact, nothing to do with the actual religion, but the fact that somebody has been told to disregard the government rules is laying down a very bad precedent for other people, because people could take advantage of it and bad people.
Well, basically, I'm paraphrasing the Archbishop now, and we'll have a clip in a sec. Basically saying everyone else is doing it, why can't we?
Well, just because somebody does a bad thing, you have to do it as well.
Okay, that's your point. Why benchmark yourself against something that the state says is wrong? But he's saying everyone else is doing it, why can't we? Everyone else has been allowed to do it, why can't we? Barry O'Sullivan, 51551 is the text number. Barry, you were listening.
I was, Joe, yeah. And just a quick point on that. And my own thing was that, well, what about, we'll say, if parents of children for confirmation or communion decide to adhere to the government guidelines and say, well, you know, we're going to wait until it's all clear to do so. Where does this, I mean, what happens then? Say you have a class of 20 or 25 children and three or four of them, their parents decide, well, you know, we want to stick to the government guidelines. What alternative does the church have in mind for that? Is there a second confirmation to happen later in the year? Same with the communions. I mean, what is the alternative? No, I mean,
What do you think of the Archbishop's line? And basically, is that everyone else is doing it? Why can't we?
Yeah, no, I don't think so. I've heard some of the other bishops as well. I mean, I think Dr. Monaghan down there from the Diocese of Killaloe were coming out. He kind of said, well, look, I mean, it's open season. I honestly don't think so. I think the church, like every other organisation, I suppose, for the last a year and a half, 2 years, everybody's been kind of adhering to it as much as possible. And they're saying, well, look, it's time to get back on the, you know, get back up on the horse again. I'm paraphrasing.
He gave loads of examples of other organisations, groups. This is just one example he gave, the Archbishop of Dublin.
Yeah, well, what I'm saying is that you can't isolate the sacraments of confirmation, for example, from what's going around us in the world. You're a person who's out and about, and uniquely, of all the events, say, that are taking place, and I'm looking at them every day here, gatherings in bars, restaurants. I was down the country last week, sports events. I was in Crow Park at the weekend, 18,000 concerts. I heard discussed last night the possibility of 70,000 people attending Electric Picnic, weddings, 100 people attend, funerals, anniversaries, birthday parties. And the only gathering that seems to pose any risk is a parent taking their child along to receive the sacrament of confirmation. Now, that's simply not credible.
Okay, and we'll get the other clip in a sec where he mentioned the party hosted by former Government Minister Catherine Sapone in the Merion Hotel. He was very upset about that as well, saying they can do it. Why can't we?
I think he's clutching at straws, to be honest with you. But, the thing about Crow Park...
He's saying religion is being discriminated against. That's the undertow.
I don't think it is, but my point is, what about the parent who decide that they want to stick to government guidelines until such a time as they say, right, okay, it's okay to have, you know, communion confirmations, christenings, etc. What is he proposing is the alternative? Is he going to run a second communion? Or, I mean, that is discrimination in a way in itself, because, as I said, you have a classroom of 25 having, you know, for communion confirmation, whatever it is, and if there are four or five kids in that class, how are the kids made to feel then if their parents are you know, they're adhering to government guidelines. I mean, what is he saying in relation to those kids? That's what I want to know. Now, it's not so much that the fact that they're taking place. I mean, I'm sure within the church themselves, the church buildings themselves, everything will be safe. I don't know if they'll be looking for passport, COVID passports or anything like that. But, you know, what is it? I mean, what is the alternative for the parents? And I'd imagine there'd be quite a number who say, well, listen, you know, we're following guidelines. What are you going to do in relation to our kids? That's basically my point. Not the fact that they're actually taking place. What is he proposing as an alternative? And not just.
Well, do you think the archbishops are wrong to defy public health guidelines? And they keep saying they're only guidelines, but now they've categorically said we're going to defy them.
I suppose straight up, I would say probably yes for the moment. I would say yes for the moment. Yeah. I think it's bad leadership. That's about it.
Okay, Catherine, stay there, Barry. 1850 715 815. Catherine White is in Dublin 24. Catherine, you, what do you think of the Archbishop of Dublin, the most senior prelate so far to say everyone else is doing it, including the he brought up the issue of the Merion Hotel party, even though the Merion Hotel say it was in the guidelines, but he brought it up. We'll get a clip in a sec. Catherine White, what's your position?
My position is, I'm very, very annoyed, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
Where was our Archbishop of Dublin 2 weeks ago when the thing happened in the Priory, the funeral?
The show funerals, yeah.
Yes.
Well, we asked him to come on numerous times.
And he didn't come on.
He wasn't available.
Now he's coming on. I'm a regular mass goer, Joe.
Mm-hmm.
And I have never seen a child that's going to make their communion or confirmation attend the church, in any church in Dalla.
Yeah, but the reason why Neffet are against communions is because of the party afterwards. That's
yes,
what they said, the gatherings afterwards.
A neighbour of mine her daughter was going to get her confirmation, and they had a room booked in a pub for the day. The Archbishop of Dublin said he didn't know of any COVID in schools in Tallaght. Well, he's really out of touch, Joe.
Well, I haven't heard that comment. I listened to the full interview with Brian.
In my local church, before the school holidays, the teacher brought over the children that were going to make their Holy Communion. Now, they were well spaced. They had little slips of paper. They read the lesson.
As Father Tony Flannery pointed out yesterday to Katie and the Today programme, he said if parents want their child to make their communion, they simply bring them to Mass and bring them up to communion. It's as simple as that. Now, I also heard of a wonderful, wonderful story. I'd love to find out the padre's name, of a priest in the Dublin area who was officiating at the funeral of a man who happened to be a grandfather. And during the prayers of the faithful or whatever, one of his grandchildren said he was so looking forward to me making my communion. Okay?
Yeah.
And the priest beckoned the child over on the altar and said, would you like to make your communion now? With your grandfather's remains here. And her parents and her said yes. And the priest did the blessing and said, now you've made your communion and your grandfather will be happy. And that was the most magnificent gesture. I also heard of private communions at €70 a lash by an individual priest. And a public communion, it was €30 if you're in a group. So communions have been going on, but what's now happened is that the archbishops have lined up, four or five of them, and they've lined up as a five-a-side against the government. And they said, I'll give another example, they mentioned restaurants, they mentioned the electric picnic, which hasn't happened yet. We don't know what's going to happen at electric picnic. He went into a restaurant, there was no checking of vaccinations or whatever. And then he mentioned the Catherine Sapone party in the Merion Hotel was 50 people. Why could that happen and communions couldn't happen? That is his point. But you're saying to you, the majority of communions that you see are about bouncy castles and
fairy cakes and the play buses and all that. Only a couple of weeks ago, Joe,
Okay, here is the point, Archbishop Dermot Martin Dermot Farrell made, when he was talking in the last few minutes.
You know, it's okay to have a bash in the Merrion Hotel with 50 people present, but yet it's not possible for a parent to take their child along to receive a sacrament. And it's difficult for me and for priests and parents, and I have lots of parents writing to me, to avoid the conclusion that regulating religious practice, which everybody tells me is inherently safe, including I've heard the Taoiseach say this, I've heard ministers say it, that it has been adopted almost in what I would describe as a very casual way.
There you are now, he's saying. The party in the Merrion. Now, there's lots of questions about the party in the Merrion. Who paid for it? What was the purpose of it? Who were the civil servants at the party? If there were civil servants there, why were they there? What was the, were their speeches? What was the occasion? But that's almost a party political issue at this stage. But the Merrion are adamant that they stood by the event was outdoors and they stood by guidelines. But the bishop is saying, if you can have a bash, as he called it, in the Merrion, why can't a parent bring their child up for communion?
But Joe, my point is,
yeah,
we'll say that the communion can go ahead.
Yeah. Well, that's what he's saying, yes.
Yeah, we'll say that it can go ahead. Yeah. Now, where are the children after that word? Afterwards, they're never taken to the church.
Yeah, but remember, if I go back to the time that the Archbishop wasn't available to talk about the hijacking of the funerals in Talla, yeah, when those awful things happened in the church, they also said what happens outside the church is none of our business. And they're saying the same. What parents do after the communion is none of our business. Colm Lopez, Colm, your point, please. You're in County Cork.
My point basically is that the church is comparing itself to a business, in the sense that it's comparing itself to restaurants, which are there to make money. Mm-hmm. And I presume that the reason the church is upset is because it's losing a load of money. And nothing to do with religion whatsoever.
Yeah, but you've no evidence for that, Colm. The Archbishop, the prelate, never mentioned money. Never.
No, he mentioned businesses. He compared himself to businesses. Yeah, he compared himself to restaurants. If you're comparing yourself to something, then you're comparing that you're the same as that person. Are you not when you're comparing?
Okay, well, let's hear again what he said about the Merrion Hotel. The bash.
You know, it's okay to have a bash in the Merrion Hotel with 50 people present, but yet it's not possible for a parent to take their child along to receive a sacrament. And it's difficult for me and for priests and parents, and I have lots of parents writing to me, to avoid the conclusion that regulating religious practice, which everybody tells me is inherently safe, including I've heard the Taoiseach say this, I've heard ministers say it, that it has been adopted almost in what I would describe as a very casual way.
And it's worth remembering as well, Catherine and Colm, that the Archbishop, he's a significant number of degrees, theology, divinity, but one of his degrees is in science. He's a scientist.
Listen, he's supporting his organisation. He's doing a good job. And basically, as far as I can see, that since the extension has come in for numbers in various places, the church has got upset because it hasn't got the same numbers as the electric picnic going into its buildings, and therefore it's losing a lot of money.
But he also said, like, this is the biggest, this is turning into the biggest, we obviously the church took a position on divorce and abortion, but in terms of public policy, but in terms of a standoff between a government decision. And the Archbishop Dermot Farrell also said that it's a matter of profound regret that there's been no engagement with church representatives regarding revision of public health guidelines. Since the mother and child scheme row in the late 1940s, this is probably the biggest standoff between where they're not criticising the government per se on social policy. They're saying you are, which they're entitled to do, but they're saying you are discriminating against the religious and religion in this island, especially Catholic religions. Colm, what do you think of that?
Well, I think if they're going to bring up discrimination, I think they should first of all get down on their hands and knees, the whole lot of them, and beg forgiveness and take that cash that they've been hoarding for years for selling babies and things like that before they start lecturing anybody.
Okay.
Discrimination.
Okay, Tony Keenan. Thanks, Colm Lopez. Tony Keenan is in Monaghan, 1857-15. 815, your point. You agree with A.B. Dermot Farrell, the Archbishop of Dublin?
Absolutely, Joe. I think there's a wee bit of lack of balance here.
Well, here you are. Off you go.
Yeah. As I say, Joe, I think there's a wee bit of lack of balance and maybe some engineering of the facts. These are guidelines, not regulation. Mm-hmm. What we have here is the Archbishop has said that if parish councils and parents are happy to go ahead by the communion or confirmation, they can do so.
And would that
be...
Will that be a vote, Tony?
In each parish, there's a parish council,
yeah.
Joe.
Yeah, I know that. Yeah.
And matters of importance. Parish council, in consultation with the people in the parish and the clergy and whoever else, all the people who work and help, and they make the decisions. This whole thing that the bishops of the churches are running the parishes, that's old hat.
Okay. But you say these are guidelines, not regulations. But they're guidelines. But hang on, they are guidelines that the church has adhered to because the church argued if there's moral leadership needed in the country, it should come from, among others, it should come from the church. Now the Archbishop is saying, inter alia, in his interview, well, if you want to look for moral leadership, look at what happened in the bash, as he called it, at the Merrion Hotel, which was populated by politicians and civil servants. That's his point. But surely the Archbishop should be, when they go low, he should go high.
Well, Joe, it probably is always a good idea to go high, but however, what we're talking about here is actually a ridiculous scenario. There are limits on the numbers, both in communion and confirmation. Mm-hmm. On the 5th of August, you're going to have a wedding with 100 people.
Yeah.
I've been at weddings, I've been at confirmations, and I've been at communion. And I'll tell you, Joe, the party after a wedding is a lot more...
If that's what's happening, we're heading towards another lockdown like what's happening in other parts of the world.
I don't think so, Joe.
Tony, you've just said, and Israel is a higher level than ours, and they're going back into various restrictions, not lockdown, but various restrictions. But you've just said that weddings, if you want to see something risky, see the parties at weddings. I don't know whether you've been to a wedding.
So risky
means danger in the current atmosphere. And if that's that's what's happening, and if that's our benchmark, we're heading to another very difficult scenario. Stay there, Tony, please. Frank Brown is in Dublin.
Yes.
Your point, please. You're a deacon in Ballyroan Parish Church in Dublin.
Yeah, I just wanted to say that the Archbishop has been very clear about the importance of safety. And I know all the parishes, I know Rathfarnham and Ballyroan, we have 100, between the two parishes, over 100 young children waiting to have been baptised. So it was really great that we got the green light and the government guidelines. But this Archbishop has been clear. He doesn't want anyone put at risk. He's told people to wait. He's also said...
He's told people to wait. But he's also said to them today, wait no longer. No one else is waiting. Why should we?
Yeah, I mean, what you're saying is true. How you're saying it, you're probably phrasing it in a way that says, look, this guy doesn't care about safety. When in fact, I know when, just very quickly, regarding baptisms, he said you can't do baptisms. However, if the child is ill or there's special circumstances. So some parishes, including myself, you know, we had single events where one person and close family. And I think that's the message for the future. Everyone I know in ministry is actually, it's one of the, one. If there's a positive to this terrible epidemic, is the fact that we will now, for the foreseeable future, have small events. There won't be 90 kids with all their families and packed churches. And quite rightly, as one of your speakers said, you know, sometimes these kids won't
and
won't
do you,
be back.
What do you think of the undertow of what the bishops are saying, and that is that the church has been discriminated against when it comes to these guidelines. We're left, what was his point? It's a profound regret that there's been no engagement with church representatives by the government on the public health guidelines. No engagement, he said.
Yeah, well, I'm disappointed that there hasn't been good engagement. I just think when you use words like discrimination, it's really unhelpful. I don't think there's particularly discrimination. What I do think is because the Catholic Church, for all sorts of good reasons, have come under a lot
many,
of criticism.
Many have, this is the Archbishop say, many have concluded that in the absence of appropriate justification, these guidelines are discriminatory.
Can I say
he introduced that word.
Yeah, but I don't think it's helpful to say I'm being discriminated against. I think there's an argument to say that I just think there was two points made earlier. One was that there's a charge for communions and confirmations, and that's clearly untrue. You cannot charge. However, when one of the things that the Archbishop, I think, is keen to do, particularly with confirmation, the Church has spent a lot of time and a lot of money training up volunteers like myself to do preparation courses online for communions and confirmations. So if the Church got the green light to say, look, you can do confirmations, mm-hmm. you can do communions, we know we can start doing the preparation work. I mean, it is lovely for that child whose grandfather had died.
Incredible story.
But there is preparation because, as people know, most people haven't been coming to church regularly, particularly younger people, younger families. And it is in our interest to have smaller groups but some preparation so they know what they're doing. They know why they're making this commitment. A sacrament is a sign. It represents the fact that the Church in some way is saying, look, this is you becoming a Catholic, a Christian, and hopefully you'll experience the Spirit. Hopefully it'll help you in your faith development. So I think what we want is not that there's parties and hundreds of people attending the church. It's just there's flexibility. And my last point really is it's the confirmation group. These kids now are in secondary school and they're no longer as involved with the local schools that we're normally working with. And the kids have been waiting 1-2 years. And what you wanted was a green light to start the ball rolling for the kids waiting 2 years. Small groups. Most parents are sensible.
By the way, you the same Frank Brown, I see it now, that's in the Irish Times today, a letter.
Yes.
Okay. And you say at the end, while the government should not tell us how to pray, I think it is entitled to advise us how to party, at least in the short term.
Well, I do.
Are you not contradicting what you've just told me now?
Well, I hope I'm not contradicting, because the message we have to anyone making a baptism is small numbers. And please don't, like coming to Mass at a funeral, please don't congregate at the end of the church.
Okay.
Small numbers.
But now the church are saying, well, five prelates, and including the Monsignor prelate outside Eamon Martin, Primate of All Ireland, that the dike has broken and the dam has burst and the Archbishop is saying go ahead and have. That's what people are hearing.
No, I think what he's really saying is parishes, if you think you're ready, start making preparations safely. That's what he's actually saying. If you think you're ready, I help.
Even though the scientists tell us we're not ready, are you?
Well, we are ready if they're done safely. We're not ready for people 100
people in
the church.
No, but the scientists are saying, the scientists and the Archbishop, term it happens to be a scientist as well. The scientists are saying, no, our considered opinion at this stage, it could change tomorrow, I don't know. You could argue it could change because of this standoff. Our considered opinion at the minute is that communion should not go ahead. We're allowing baptism, weddings, adults, etc.
They've only just recently agreed to baptisms, and the pressure to have weddings has come from the wedding industry, particularly.
Very good point.
So,
the pressure to open restaurants has come from the restaurant industry.
Correct.
We had that remarkable scene, which we spoke about yesterday at the Publican in Cork. Tony Campion boasting about the fact that he's paying 18. His pubs and restaurants are flying again, absolutely out the door. He's paying 18.5 grand in. These are his words, and he hasn't denied them. He's sorry that they were broadcast. He said 18.5 grand in wages every week, but I'm getting 15 grand back off Micheál. Come on, Micheál, he said. He's getting 15 grand back off. Where's morality there, we might say. But anyway, well, if Mr. Campion wants to deny that's the case, let him come on. Patrick Duffy. Patrick, your point, please.
My point is that the situation with communions and confirmations is totally different to even the normal attendance of Mass, because the mass-going population is by and large pretty elderly, and children, communion and confirmation age are pretty well not vaccinated at all, and we know they are carriers.
Good point, yeah.
And we also know that communions in Ireland are totally associated with excess, like the kids build up to.
Well, not all communion.
Well, not all, no, but an awful lot of them are built up to vast amounts of
Been remarked upon most floridly by the former Archbishop of Dublin, Diarmaid Martin, who talked about the horses and the carriages and the Cinderella carry on and the parties and all this carry on.
Yeah, they get an awful lot of money, a lot of them. And
what do you think of the bishops, let's say now, saying that the guidelines, we've stuck to them up to this, but we are going to do what everyone else is doing, that is move forward?
I think it's very, very irresponsible. I think it's irrational because of what I just said. I think it's very irresponsible. I think it encourages anti-vaxxers and so on. And at a stage when...
How does it encourage anti-vaxxers?
Well, because they're refusing to go along with sort of guidelines. I mean, guidelines are orders. The government is trying to avoid ordering things because people get their backs up.
Yeah.
So they're trying to issue guidelines, and the whole idea is that we go along with the guidelines.
Okay. Well, I have three people still on the line. I don't know if a fourth person. I have Tony, who's one position.
Yeah, can I make one quick comment, Joe?
Who's that? Tony, yes.
Tony.
Yeah.
Yeah. We seem to be confusing guidelines and rules. These are guidelines. I have broken a guideline that NAFID gave. I was very glad I did so. NAFID gave a guideline early in the pandemic. Do not wear a mask. I'm not an idiot. I knew it was quite safe to wear a mask.
Tony, language is important. In fairness, that's how
you can play back the tape.
I know, they didn't
we
say...
Were told not to.
They did not say, do not wear a mask. They
we
did say...
enough to wear them.
They said, at this stage, we are not... part of our guidelines is not that people should wear a mask. They did not say, if you wear a mask, you're breaking the guidelines. It's not semantics.
We needed to wear masks. People were misled and didn't wear masks, and people probably died. I wore a mask because it's standard procedure in any communicable disease to wear a mask.
But you weren't breaking any guideline by wearing a mask. I'm sorry, you were not.
Well,
you were not.
You can talk about statements, guidelines, and regulations.
No, you were not breaking a guideline by wearing. You were never breaking a guideline by wearing a mask. You know what I mean?
I watched the CMO coming out every evening and giving his statements, and we were not encouraged to wear masks. And we were encouraged.
But it wasn't a guideline. It was a guideline.
And I think, again, Joe, it's nobody will contradict or criticise NAFID. NAFID have made many mistakes.
Okay.
Vaccination ages, we don't mix vaccines. We're still doing stuff. We were very poor with people who are immunosuppressed. They should have been at the front of the queue. I still know people who are immunosuppressed haven't received their second vaccination.
Yeah, but we're now...
I'm fortunate. I've received both.
Okay, well done. Like most people, like most adults
like
in the country
any sensible
now.
Person.
And we're way ahead of our comparator, which is the UK.
Ahead. And when you said about breakthrough in Israel, you're right, Joe. There has been some small breakthrough.
Yeah.
No vaccine is 100%.
Yeah.
But the level of illness is... minuscule, the level of ICU and hospitalisation is minuscule if you've been vaccinated.
Okay, well, I have the three of you on who from three different perspectives. I want to listen, I want to hear that clip again when the Archbishop brought up the Catherine Sapone party in the Merrion Hotel, the bash.
You know, it's okay to have a bash in the Merrion Hotel with 50 people present, but yet it's not possible for a parent to take their child along to receive a sacrament. And it's difficult for me and for priests and parents, and I have lots of parents writing to me, to avoid the conclusion that regulating religious practice, which everybody tells me is inherently safe, including I've heard the Taoiseach say this, I've heard ministers say it, that it has been adopted almost in what I would describe as a very casual way.
In a casual way. Now, Tony, if I can ask you, you can refuse to answer this question. Tony, what do you think of the Catherine Sapone issue that's around at the minute, the controversy? Have you a view on it?
I suppose it proves the Archbishop is human. And I don't know whether you regret saying that or not. I'm sure the party was important, Catherine Sapone, probably very badly.
No, I'm talking about the appointment of Catherine Sapone by Simon Coveney.
Free speech represented in the UN.
Yeah, that's right. An envoy.
I'd say now, Catherine's record on certain areas of free speech wouldn't be great now. She'd be very good on the left wing. Liberals
okay.
She'd be very
I'll ask the same question of Frank and Patrick. But Tony, do you think she should now resile from taking up the position? She should say, no, I don't want it.
I'd like to hear a statement from her in person. And she's answered RTÉ News.
Well, a statement, one of the statements I want to read out is from the Merrion Hotel. And they say the government regulations at the time allowed for outdoor events of up to 200 people, and that the definition of that includes social events. This upper limit still applies, except now indoor events in hotels are excluded per government guidelines. So they're adamant. And the Catherine Sapone has told RT reporter Gail Conway further queries regarding the event should be directed to the hotel. For their statement. And I was assured by the Merrion Hotel that the event would be... But why I'm asking, Tony, you're saying, I'm asking you, which is the political controversy at the minute, whether people are talking about it on the streets, I don't know, but have you an opinion on whether she should take up the position or not, given the controversy that's now emerged? Yes or no?
I think the controversy is absolutely nothing to do with the position. I don't think she breached any guidelines.
Okay.
I think it was relatively harmless. But you know yourself, Joe, everybody has a pop at the politicians in the church.
Okay.
Every opportunity.
So you think Catherine Sapone should stick, she's been given the job, she should stick to it?
No, what I said was I don't think the event or the bash should have any effect on it. I think it's
I wasn't asking about that. I was asking about the controversy. But I take the point that I was straying. Frank Brown, what do you think? Should Catherine Sapone, I don't know whether you've been following this, it's been all over the papers and radio.
Yeah.
Should Catherine Sapone continue to hold that position, or should she resign because of the controversy?
Well, I think Catherine Sapone's history of all she's done. I worked as a social worker in Tala.
Yeah.
She's done fantastic work and is well qualified. However, you know, it always is good for open. You know, if you're going to apply for a job, I do think it's interesting that the hotel are saying they operate that event safely. And I think, sorry to go back to the Archbishop, I think that's what he's saying. We can do the same thing, and nobody gets into our church without a mask.
Okay,
nobody.
So I see that comparator, Patrick Duffy.
Yes, sir.
Do you think now about the controversy, not about the Merrion Hotel, but about the controversy that's arisen out of the way Catherine Sapone got the appointment? Micheál Martin didn't know about it, apparently, and she was offered and accepted it by Simon Coveney.
Yeah, I think it's maybe a bit unfortunate, but I think a lot of people are trying to make a huge use of that.
Okay.
Nobody has mentioned the fact, which used to be the case in public service, was that by taking on Catherine Sapone, who I believe now resides in New York,
The state
is saving a certain amount of money.
Okay. Well, that seems to be...
But she's definitely extremely well qualified, and it must be very aggravating or very annoying when you know that somebody's standing beside you, or you know somebody who's extremely good at something, and you've got to go through a long procedure. I don't know how many months that would take.
That's just a quick straw poll. Okay, thank you all for your contributions. Joe at RTÉ.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Liveline on RTÉ Radio 1 with a Kia eSoul. Going electric? Stop wondering and start driving. The Kia eSoul with a range up to 452 kilometres.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
On yesterday's programme, we interviewed at length Vincent Doyle and Michael McGuirk, both of whom are children of different Irish Catholic priests. And in the conversation, by the website, by the way, is called Coping, as in Children of Priests, copinginternational.com. But in the course of it, I said, well, say a priest denies that this child is mine. And Vincent made the point in great detail. He said, there's so many DNA sites now available, Ancestry.com, MyHeritage.ie, I think it's called. There are a lot of them are based in Dublin, actually, that you can get matches. And, most people have done it, the DNA at this stage. You go into those databases and you can discover. Now, there's a remarkable story here. Carol, who's in the United States at the minute, I look at your phone number, but Carol is from Kansas. Well, maybe you're in Ireland on your American mobile. You're from Kansas in the USA. Actually, you're still in Dublin. And you're meeting your natural family for the first time. Carol, tell us how you found your natural family, and beginning with why you thought your father, as you knew him, a beautiful man, wasn't your biological father.
Well, it actually happened quite by accident during the pandemic, during the lockdown with my immediate family. My daughter Morgan and I were having this conversation about what we thought was our German heritage.
Okay.
And then Yeah. And then I remember that my daughter had actually taken a DNA test on one of those sites previously. So I asked her to open it up and show it to me. And to my surprise, there was no German heritage and there were all of these Irish surnames. Okay. And so my daughter said, Mom, what does this mean? And
So you know, normally when you get percentages, Carol, what were the percentages that your daughter got when she did the DNA of her background?
So my daughter pulls roughly 50% of my DNA. So hers was reading around 30% Irish, and then a large background of broadly European. And then, of course, mm-hmm. We found out we all have a little bit of African as well.
Okay.
But
the big reveal for you was there's no German. And my father was German.
Exactly. Okay. So the family story was that great-grandfather came from Germany. But that's an assumption that I think generations had, that just because he came from Germany, that maybe he was German. So we found out that was not the case whatsoever.
And you said it to your mother? Or how did you find out that your father, as you knew him, was not your biological dad?
Well, when I actually conducted my own DNA test and the results came back, it showed that I was 60% Irish.
Wow.
And yes. So, and I had none of my maiden surnames listed as DNA matches. So mm-hmm. that was the other clue. But a lot of Irish surnames. So she wasn't quite ready to answer me at my first questioning. Okay. I then continued my own research, and then later on, she was very forthcoming with the details.
So she did reveal, and I'm sure it was difficult for your mom, who you love dearly. She did reveal that actually your father was someone else, your biological father.
Yes, yes.
Okay, and how did that lead you to Ireland?
Well, in my heritage, I found that not only was I 60% Irish, but I had a 25% DNA match from a John Sullivan. And knowing that you pull roughly 50% DNA from each parent, mm-hmm. 25% means, oh my goodness, this is an uncle or a half sibling. And mm-hmm. regardless, if I could make contact, he would know who my biological father was.
Okay. So what did you do next?
I attempted to contact him through the MyHeritage app. There's you can email individuals directly, but after about 5 or 6 attempts to contact him, I wasn't receiving any information back. So I thought possibly the account might not be active any longer. Hmm. So I reached out to MyHeritage and they explained to me that they could actually contact Mr. John Sullivan and see if the account was still active.
Oh, I didn't know they do that, do they? MyHeritage, is it .com or .ie? Probably both. MyHeritage, the website and the DNA collector, so to speak, they will, it's MyHeritage.com, they will, if you go to them, they would say, well, we will write to this person or contact this person and say, we've had an inquiry, would you like to hear about it?
Exactly. They don't. They won't disclose any of your personal details,
right,
but
okay.
they'll attempt to make. Yes, they'll make that contact for you. And luckily enough for me, that my Uncle Jack, as I know now, was more than willing to make contact.
So step forward, Uncle Jack. Uncle Jack, good afternoon.
Hello, Joe.
How are you keeping, Uncle Jack?
I'm in a whirlwind here.
And where are you ringing from? What part of the Antarctic?
No, I don't know. Maybe it's a bad connection. I'm here in Dublin.
I knew that when
right
I heard the phone. Okay, Uncle Jack, how were you? Were you surprised when you got this contact saying, we believe somebody in America believes they're related to you?
Yes, well, it was really, the contact was made by MyHeritage because I didn't really get involved in it very much, even though they had sent me things. I don't know whether I just cleared it after, you know, your different email. So, and when I got it, I said, bring it on. I said, this is the more the merrier. I'm the father of 12 children. What's the use of one more?
You have 12 children. Well, congratulations, Jack.
Yeah.
And so Jack, how were you related? How did you, which side of the family are you related to in terms of Carol?
Was it Carol is the daughter of my oldest brother. There were three boys.
Yeah.
My father from West Cork and my mother from Armagh.
And what were the three boys called? Jack?
Tim, Jack and Tom.
Tim, Jack and Tom. Okay. And who was Carol's father? Oh, God.
Well, Carol's father was my older brother by 2 years.
And which is the eldest, Tim or Tom?
Tim.
Okay. And Carol, did you ever meet Tim?
No. Unfortunately, I discovered he had passed away in 1986.
And did your mother confirm?
She did not know that he had passed away. They didn't have any contact throughout the years. But luckily for me, getting to know Uncle Jack, I was able to get to know my father through his
story. Okay, but did your mother tell you the story of Tim?
Yes, she told me how they met and how energetic and full of life he was.
Where did they meet?
They met in Chicago.
Okay. So she met Tim in Chicago. She became pregnant with you. And did she explain what happened? Things happened. What happened when things moved on and Tim moved in a different direction?
Absolutely. So she ended up moving to the Kansas City area after that, where she met the gentleman that I grew up believing was my father. So he married my mother and gave me his name on my birth certificate. A young Catholic girl, you can imagine what that meant.
Yeah. So you were what age were you when your mom married your father?
I was not even born yet. So she met him. Yes. So he knew it. He knew the story and he knew the stigma when it came to being a young Catholic girl and was willing to marry her and put his name on my birth certificate. Wow. So my mom's family never knew.
That's incredible.
Yes.
So the way how did they do the dates and the trimesters and the 9 months and how did
if individuals question it I don't think they did so publicly. It was probably something they talked about amongst themselves.
But as far as where's your mother from originally?
From upstate New York in the state.
But they're on the same landmass, but again the technology wouldn't have been as fast and as instant and as accessible as it is today. You were saying your mother told her family, I'm married and I'm pregnant.
Yes.
Not I'm pregnant and I'm getting married.
Exactly.
Okay. Jack.
Yeah.
How come Jack, Tim and Tom were in Chicago? Where did you tell them you're from? West Cork, Armagh?
Well, my father is from West Cork and my mother from Armagh. And they met in Chicago, probably at one of the dances that were so popular. And then we three boys were born just one after the other, and then sadly my mother died when I was 12, so my brother was just a year older, and so that gave us a lot of room. And my father was very diligent in looking after us and raising us, and I remember one time him shouting up to the heavens, "What is going on with you now?" A father has very little, emotional capacity for what was going on. You know, with three boys and we're all going in different directions. So that's what happened.
Okay, but you weren't born in Ireland.
Yeah, correct.
So what do you do? What are you doing living in Ireland for the last 3 decades? Why not, says you, but what brought you?
Yes, well, I have family here.
Okay.
And believe it or not, I got involved in politics in Ireland and met John Hume with the current president, Mr. Biden, back in the 70s. And I just got interested in it, and I came out. And John Hume picked me up from a place, and he brought me home to his house, and I slept in his bed. I got up and did a normal shower, and I came down to his breakfast table. Everyone was looking at me kind of with a sour foot because I used up all the hot water.
So you're well settled here at this stage.
I was here, and I was connected in Chicago with the Democratic Party.
Okay.
So, and I was just full of myself to go around looking, doing things. I was interested, obviously, in Ireland, my mother and father being so. My mother dead, my father, I'm getting pretty old. So, a poet in Ireland, Desmond Egan.
Oh, yeah, great.
Came to do a reading. Do a reading in my house, which I asked him to do because it make a few bob. And at the end of that, we were sitting around having a glass of wine.
Mm-hmm.
And my wife at the time is nursing a baby. And Des says to me, Jack, would you ever come to Ireland? And I just turned to Kim. I said, do you want to go to Ireland? And her simple answer was, I don't mind. So I turned back to Des, and this was in November. I said, we'll go to Ireland, or we'll have our Christmas together here. We'll go to Ireland for January 1st, which we did. And Des looked after us and got us kind of focused in the right direction. He's been my lifelong friend. His poetry is fabulous.
Yeah.
And the rest is history.
But when you said, I'm going to go to Ireland, to your wife, where were your 13 children?
Well, at that time, I only had five.
Oh, sorry. So, how many? Well, that makes it even more interesting. Did you fetch up with five children to Ireland?
Yes.
Wow.
And then had seven more.
Yeah.
And youngest guy just graduated from Gonzaga.
Oh, congratulations.
And,
okay.
And he was given a complete scholarship to Boston College from one of the richest men in Ireland, who also attended Gonzaga.
Wow.
It's really, I mean, he's getting ready next week to go to Boston.
Congratulations.
Isn't it? Well, congratulations. He was a smart lad.
Yeah. So,
Jesuit looked after him pretty well.
Just like his dad and his uncles and his mother, I'm sure. but Jack, you have 13 children. Are they all here in Ireland?
I have 12 children.
Say again, sir. You're breaking up. Let me take a break and we'll get our breath in terms of a better line.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Carol contacted us. She's from America originally, but through the myheritage.com, one of those DNA sites, she discovered that instead of being German, as she thought she was 60% Irish, and this led her to find her Irish relatives who bizarrely were born in America but are now living in Ireland. And that's her Uncle Jack is the man we're talking to on the line. Uncle Jack, when did Carol's biological father, Tim, when did he die and at what age?
He died when he was 42 years of age in around 1986, I think it is.
And did he go on to have other children?
Yes, he did.
Okay. Carol, have you met or a desire to meet or a wish to meet those other children?
Oh, absolutely. So I discovered that I had a half-sister and two half-brothers. And I have met my half-sister when I first learned of her, I found out that she was sick and going through some treatment, and Uncle Jack and I both decided to wait almost a year before we contacted my siblings until she was healthier.
Okay.
So
it's been a good news story so far.
Absolutely.
Yes, absolutely.
Okay.
And Joe, I've just, we were three boys and my father.
Okay.
And now we have this wonderful woman. so, you know, beautiful and also full of knowledge and energy. I mean, it's the best thing that we could have had happen.
Magnificent. You've a niece you didn't know about.
Correct, yes.
Okay. Yeah. And did Tim ever refer to Carol, I wonder?
Never to me. It was all brand new to us. Absolutely.
Okay. So it's a remarkable. So Jack, you're well resident in Ireland now.
That's right. Sure. Yeah,
and are all your children Irish citizens?
Yes. Yes.
That's incredible.
Well, six of them were born here.
Yeah, that's what I mean. Yes, of course. Yeah. Okay. And you're glad you made the move with five children, yourself and your wife, and five young children. You emigrated. You migrated to Ireland.
That's right. And one of the cute things was that Kim was taking a lot of diapers with her. I said, I think they got diapers in Ireland.
Yeah, we have, yeah. They're called nappies.
And she says, I didn't see any.
And Jack, how did yourself and Kim, how did you feed your family? How did you make a living when you came to Ireland?
Well, I was a lawyer in Chicago.
Okay.
And I was thrifty and I was able to buy property, and so it wasn't really a financial challenge, although it was more a cultural challenge.
Okay.
And then to find a house took us about 6 months to be satisfied with that. And so it's been the best thing that ever happened to us.
Well, and is your wife still with you? I hope she is in terms of health and that health, Mulbar. And she was maybe slightly reluctant to make this big change, but how is she?
Not at all. Okay. I was shocked when I turned to Ben and said to her, you want to go to Ireland? It was like, and she's nursing a child.
Yeah, but you were. Did she know you were saying you didn't mean go to Ireland on a holiday? You mean pack up the five of them diapers and all?
Yeah. Well, what we did do is we did it in stages.
Okay.
So I told Des, when you go back,
this is Des the power with
Ireland, and then I'm going to send Kim over by herself with one of the babies in arms, and just see what she thinks in this situation, which would be kind of and she loved it. She came back. I said, "What do you think?" She's kind of laconic.
Okay, well done.
Wonderful,
she said. It's a great story. Well, good health and happiness to you all in your ongoing discoveries. That's Jack and Carol who contact us. joe@rt.ie.
Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815. Talk to Joe on 1850-715-815.
Just a reminder of that devastating email we got yesterday from a paramedic in the National Ambulance Service, and we have checked the person out, and that is their employee. They have stood over the letter they sent us, which basically said that their work is in a state of crisis. What's happening in the ambulance service on a daily basis, extremely frightening and dangerous. I can only speak for Cork, but I'm aware from speaking with colleagues that it's the same throughout the country. And we've had a number of calls recently, primarily about the emergency ambulance service in Dublin and the delay. Now, let me go to, is it Yvonne first? Yvonne, good afternoon.
Hi there, how are you?
In your case, it was in County Wexford. What happened?
Tuesday, my daughter fell off a horse down here. We're in rural Wexford. We're about 20-25 minutes away from Wexford Hospital. So she fell off the horse, and we were 2 hours, 20 minutes waiting for an ambulance.
Wow.
for her.
And maybe she was okay and didn't...
No, well, when she fell off, she was initially complaining. She said she banged her head. And she had hurt her back and her neck. Mm-hmm. So obviously we were thinking straight away, you know, spinal injury. We didn't move her or anything. You know, so my husband rang the ambulance straight away. We did everything we could. We're both first aiders.
Okay, which basically is don't move your child.
Don't move her, yeah.
Don't give her food or water, I presume,
exactly,
in case you need an operation.
Exactly, giving her nothing.
And so did they give, when you phoned at 6:50 p.m. in the evening, were you given an indicator of how long the emergency ambulance might take?
No, we were just told what to do. We said they're organising one for us there now. So
did
then
you give,
they rang.
As a matter of interest, did they ask for your air code?
They did, yeah. We had that on hand. Yeah,
That's interesting.
We gave them the air code.
Because we discovered today That Dublin Fire Brigade, which is the busiest emergency service in not just all of Ireland, but beyond in terms of the resources they have, Dublin Fire Brigade don't have access, direct access to air code directions in their emergency vehicles, believe it or not. I'll read out the statement from Dublin Fire Brigade, from the Dublin City Council. They don't, 7 years after the introduction of air code, Dublin Fire Brigade do not have direct access to air code in their emergency vehicles. They can ring head office or radio head office and say, this is the air code, tell us where it is. But in terms of a screen and a map in front of them, in where seconds and minutes make a difference, they don't, which is shocking. Now, maybe it doesn't cause some problems, but it was, I thought that was one of the... So they got the air code in Wexford and they still took 2 hours, 20 minutes.
20 minutes, did they say why... The air code down here, we will be lost. Like, we just...
Yeah,
you
I understand that. That's what,
here,
as I said, that's
so
what... That's why it's so popular, so important, yeah, now, 7 years on. Now, did they say then why we were you were waiting...
No, they
140
just said that there was none available.
No ambulance
available.
Okay,
yeah, so
okay.
They rang back after an hour then, and they just asked her how we were. You know, we were expecting an ambulance to drive in at any minute, but they were asking how she was, and she was getting more scared as time went on, obviously, because we were saying, it's coming, and she thought we were lying to her. You know, we were kind of doing everything we could to reassure her.
By the way, importantly now, how is your daughter?
She's good. No, she's good. She had mild concussion and she's stiff and sore,
okay,
but thank God she was,
but
she's
a terrible,
fine.
It's a terrible, terrible worry. Stay there, yeah, Yvonne. And that's why we have the 999 emergency ambulance service. Louise, yeah, Murphy. Louise, good afternoon.
Hi,
what happened?
Yeah.
What happened?
On the weekend, an elderly woman had a bad fall and I looked after, another girl, Orla, and we made sure she was well looked after.
Yeah, Louise, one more break, please. I'm sorry, it's just your line is impenetrable.
Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815. Talk to Joe on 1850 715 815.
Louise, hopefully that's a better line.
Yes. Hiya, can you hear me now?
Yeah, loud and clear. Tell us quickly what happened, please.
At the weekend, I was sitting at the bus stop waiting on a friend, and a lady fell, had a very bad fall, hurt herself very badly. I sat her up on the bus stop bench, looked after her eyes, kept her eye clean, and
okay,
then she didn't want to go in the ambulance, and then she knew she couldn't move her arm, so she asked to call an ambulance. So the other girl, Orla, that was with me, called the ambulance,
okay,
and it took just over the hour for the ambulance to come for Madeline.
This was in Camden Street, the centre of Dublin.
Yeah, it was, yeah.
And did they say why the 999 ambulance
They were very busy.
Yeah, we know that. That's the nature of the service.
They just didn't give the girl an explanation. She just said, like, that they were very busy. And then our son had rang back when he'd met up at the bus stop with his mum.
Okay.
And he was told he should be there very soon. So it was just exactly an hour to when the girl had called that he came.
Yeah. Okay, and do we know who that woman is now?
Yeah, she has, I've been texting her family, she has a dislocated shoulder, but she's getting there, she's doing well.
And we think she's okay now?
Yeah, well, she's got a dislocated shoulder, but...
Okay. And was she in much pain, do you think, Louise?
Oh, she was, yeah, she was. She was in a lot of pain, you could see it.
That's a pity now.
Yeah. But we just tried to keep her as stable and comfortable as we could. You know?
Okay.
Lovely lady. Lovely lady.
Yeah, well done. Well done. You're a good Samaritan. You really are. Fair play. Yeah. Let me go to Marion. Marion.
Hello, Joe.
Hello. How long was your brother waiting on a 999 ambulance in Dublin?
We were waiting for 3 hours.
Tell us what happened.
What happened was he rang me at about 6 o'clock in the house. And he lives in Drumina, and I went down, my husband and I went down, we got there for about 6:30, and we rang the ambulance straight away. He was on his hands and knees vomiting. So for 3 hours we waited, we kept ringing and ringing and ringing. No sign of the ambulance. Now, by the way, he lives in Drumina, and the hospital is James's Hospital. It's about 10 to 15 minutes of a distance. So.
And there is an ambulance. Well, there, I don't know what the new configuration with the building was. There was a major ambulance, National Ambulance Service depot in James's Hospital.
Now, James's Hospital.
But they are called out by the emergency call out, which is Dublin Fire Brigade. And obviously, I don't know what happened on the day, but you're right, there's an ambulance base 4 minutes away. Okay. Your poor brother, what was he suffering from, Marion?
He was suffering from his bowel ruptured.
Oh, my God.
He had a ruptured bowel.
I cannot imagine the pain.
Oh, and the screams of him. Joe, I still am traumatised after listening to him. I really am. The screams. My husband tried to calm him down. I'm watching out the window. Oh. 3 hours later, the ambulance come. And when I went in the ambulance with him, and they were ringing to the resource, you know, to say how bad he was. They kept saying when we get him there. But when we got there anyway, is he had, on the Tuesday, going into Tuesday, he had a big operation.
Right.
And they removed his bowel. And with that, he got sepsis. He was in ICU. But the worry I have now, Joe, is my brother is 77. And he lives on his own. I'm his sister. I look after him. He has an aneurysm in his heart.
Okay.
Yeah. So if the consultant told him the minute anything happens to him to get him to A&E.
Hmm.
Now, if this happens and I've trained the ambulance, if I have to wait any longer, then whatever, he's gone. He won't survive. That's the worry I have.
And on the day, the 3 hour delay day, what they said were very busy, is that it?
No, it didn't say. I just kept bringing, oh, yes, we'll be there.
But
we'll
when the paramedics arrived, and they're highly qualified paramedics in Dublin Fire Brigade, when they arrived, they realised this was very serious.
Yes, they actually realised it was so serious because as I said, I got in the ambulance with them.
Okay.
And they kept ringing and ringing to get him into the hospital. Now, this was the 17th of February 2019.
Okay.
Now, the pandemic hadn't started. So, like, it wasn't that everywhere was,
okay,
you know.
Okay, good point, yeah.
Yeah, it wasn't that anywhere. There was no coronavirus. Obviously, it did start when he was in the hospital.
Okay. I just want to go back into this. This statement from Dublin City Council on behalf. Now, we know from the ads that when you dial 999, according to the ads, the first thing they will ask you for is your air code. You know the ad where I'm in Kilmack and where what's the air code? But that doesn't happen when you dial 999 in Dublin. This is what happens.
No, there was no air code because I know I'm in Tala and I know my air code off
right,
my heart.
There was no
air code for my brother.
Okay, William. This is the explanation. Today, 2021, 7.5 years after air code was introduced by the government, Dublin Fire Brigade call takers use the address or location description provided by a subscriber as the primary location method for responding crews. What's absent there is we don't ask for air code. Approximately 50% of calls do not present with a specific air code equivalent location, such as roads, streets, parks. I understand that. Dublin Fire Brigade call takers have access to air code and can access if required to support or confirm address. Sure, we've all access to air code if you have a laptop. But what we're asking is the question that's asked when, according to the ad, they didn't tell us in the ad, the Dublin Fire Brigade don't ask for air code. It's not the first thing they ask for. And the emergency vehicles don't have direct, they can't pump in, press in the air code and get directions. And that's a disgrace. A disgrace at this stage. Marion, I'll come back to your brother because you're still very worried about him. Madeline, good afternoon. You are the woman that ran for the bus.
That's right, Joe.
What were you doing? What happened?
I seen a bus and I just took a run for it. And next thing I'm on the ground.
And what, did you trip or fall?
I tripped. Fell flat on my face.
Oh, you poor thing. Yeah, what did you trip over?
My shoulder and a cut eye.
And did you hit your face off the ground?
I did, yeah. But thanks to the wonderful people in Camden Street, Louise and Orla.
Weren't they
and
brilliant?
Another lady came over and she wanted to bring me home.
Yeah.
But I said, no, I don't live around here, you know. So finally we called for the ambulance and I got seen through them, you know. But I do want to thank those ladies, really.
Okay.
I'd have been lost without them.
So
they got me some tea and water.
Okay, so you're on the ground. Were you in pain?
I was indeed. I was in excruciating pain.
And
my shoulder was dislocated.
Where was it? On the shoulder. It's very painful.
Yeah.
And did you know? Did you know the passage of time, madam? Did you know it took an hour for the 999?
I fell at about 4:15.
Okay.
So it was about 6:30 when the ambulance came.
Oh God.
So, but I was so grateful to those people. They stayed with me. Yeah. They said,
and were you warm and comfortable, and insofar as you could be on the street? And were you lying on the pavement or?
No! I was sitting at the bus stop.
Oh, you sat at the bus stop. Yeah. Has happened to you before?
Yeah.
You've fallen before?
Have I fallen before? Yeah. About 10 times.
Ah, our Lord only fell 3 times, Madeline. You fell 10 times?
Yeah, I did indeed, yes.
Why?
And about 8 times off my bike. So, I'm so lucky I didn't break anything, Joe. I'm really grateful for that.
God, Ruby Walsh hasn't fallen that often off horses.
No. So I am extremely lucky, aren't I?
Aren't you brilliant? You're brilliant. You've fallen 8 times off your bicycle.
Yeah, and about 7 on the ground when I'm walking.
And what's the most serious fall off the bike?
Oh, just a cut knee.
Cut knee, okay.
And
what, happened? Someone stepped out in front of you or the Lewis tracks? Or?
I think I went into the back of a car.
That's not funny. And you've separately fallen 7 times.
Oh, yes, definitely, yeah.
And
was able to get up and come home. Because happened around here, you know.
And what brought you down 7 times?
But that was my most serious fall on Saturday last.
Okay, but what brought you... Are you prone to falling?
I must be. I must lift my feet, Joe.
And... The most serious fall prior to last Saturday, which was not off your bike, was where and what?
I know, that was the worst. That was the worst.
I know that, but before Saturday, have you ever broken anything?
No, I haven't.
Oh, thank God.
No.
I don't know. Are we going to let you...
No, I'm only 7 stone, so it's amazing, isn't it?
And are you tall or small or slim?
Right.
What height are you? It's probably the best way of asking that question. You dare on me, Madeline. You don't have to fall in again.
I'm very bad, Joe.
Okay. Don't fall on me now. Do you hear me?
I won't. I'm sitting here with my feet up on a
pillow. Right, well, stay there. Don't leave that house.
I won't.
Don't leave that house.
Okay.
And what height are you, Madeline?
Is Louise on the line?
Yeah, so, okay. Louise, okay. You talk to Louise. She is there, Madeline.
Okay.
You can say thanks to her. That's what you want to do. You're very good. Is the line gone on me? Madeline. Okay, the line has fallen. Olympus
is dreadful.
Okay, yeah, and I heard most of that. Louise, Madeline is saying she cannot be grateful enough for what
she's
yourself...
She's more than welcome. Oh,
okay.
She's more than welcome. I told her to do for anybody. She's a lady.
She sounds like
such a lovely lady.
An absolute lady.
Thank
you very much.
An
absolute lady.
She's such a lady.
Okay,
and
okay.
I hope she's doing well.
Okay.
I am, Louise.
Now, Madeline...
Yeah, that's good, Madeline.
Madeline, you've fallen at least 15 times in your life. Will you leave it at that?
I will, because I'm 80 now. So
if there was Olympic medals for falling, you'd be coming home with gold.
Oh, there's a gold for that.
You'd have a gold. Okay. Yeah. Olympian Madeline from Dublin, who fell on Camden Street last Saturday.
Come step
up to the podium and we give you the gold medal for Ireland.
So
good
Amy
Lamargood, well done. And thanks to our good Samaritans. I'm not. 10 seconds. Alan Dunn, quickly, this is important. You're in Mill Street, County Cork. Worst pain in your life, twisted bell. Can't believe how painful that would be. What happened? You rang the ambulance. What happened?
Yeah, I'll tell you, as you say, worst pain I've ever had. My wife rang the ambulance that morning. She was told it was coming from Kenmare, which is about a 20-minute journey away.
Okay.
I assume an ambulance would make it a bit quicker. Whatever way the GPS sent them, it was a 90-minute journey.
Okay. And they said, did they say it was the air code or the GPS?
They said it was the air code because the two ambulance people, I couldn't fault them on the day. They actually knew the area I was living in.
Okay, so they...
And they said they could have made it in the 15, 20 minutes if they knew my address, but they were only provided with the air code.
Oh, damn, now there's another complication worth looking at tomorrow. Thanks indeed. Fergus Sweeney produced. Thanks, Alan. Fergus Sweeney produced. Catherine Thomas next.
Liveline on RTE Radio 1 with Kia. For more on our 212 offers, visit your local Kia dealer or log on to kia.com.
1850-715-815 stays open until 3:15 p.m. or email joe@rte.ie.